Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome inside ESPN Studios. I'm your host, Spencer Wilson. Welcome to the show. Hope you're having a nice hump day as we are just about midway through the week here as we are working into the PM hours of Wednesday, but I hope it is treating you well. We got a fun show for you. We'll talk NCAA basketball with the new top 25 out and getting closer and closer to conference tournament season. We'll take a look at some of the news and headlines around college basketball. We'll also take a look at the NHL as another week of pro hockey is in the books. And then, of course, I'll have my daily pick for you at the end of the show. But first, wanted to start off with two pieces of information. We'll get to the bit of the NFL that you just heard if you're listening to the SportsCenter at the top of the hour. So we'll get to that topic here in a second. But did want to start with some Formula One news now that the decision has come down onto what to do with the Chinese Grand Prix. Obviously, with the whole coronavirus epidemic going on over there in China, there was a lot of conversation about whether to go ahead with the race as scheduled, whether to postpone it, whether to just cancel it, and what would they do essentially? What would the FIA and what would the sponsor group that runs the Chinese Grand Prix want to do? And thing is that the Chinese Grand Prix is one of the more lucrative races on Formula One's calendar. It's a race that's always heavily attended from practice, the first practice session, all the way through the race on Sunday. It's a race that is just very, very popular in the region and draws a lot of people into Shanghai, into the Shanghai International Circuit, which is a fun circuit. It hasn't given us a ton of close races in the past few years, but it is still a cool circuit with that long back straightaway. It just seems to go on forever. That breaks hard into that hairpin. Then, of course, the starting spiral couple turns, the first two, three turns through those tight spirals is a really cool image as the race begins. So, and of course, this past season, 2019 season, the Chinese Grand Prix was the home to the 1,000th Formula One race. So there's a lot of history, there's a lot of popularity, there's a lot of attention that goes around the Chinese Grand Prix. And the thing is that if this race was naturally later on in the season, it might not be as big of a deal because we could see where this is. I mean, when we get to the summer break in August, who knows where this coronavirus outbreak will be. There might be at least a cure for it at that time. It might be somewhat under control. We might have at least an idea of what it'll take to cure it and help, you know, bring the epidemic down. But, we just don't know where we're going to be at that time. But if it was a race that was after the summer break, that would at least give the FIA and the Chinese Grand Prix organizers at least some more time to see what to do. But the thing is, the Chinese Grand Prix was scheduled to be the fourth round of the championship. It was scheduled to go down, I think, mid-April. And so it's 2 months away, essentially, was the Chinese Grand Prix, a little more than 2 months away. And where the coronavirus outbreak is right now, they just didn't see any way, shape, or form that it would be appropriate to put teams, drivers, and fans, and officials into the danger zone, essentially, like that, which you can totally understand and is a very smart decision. So the official decision is that it is postponed. It is not canceled. If you were listening to the show last week, the FIA, which is the governing body for Formula One, it's also the governing body of Formula E, and they went ahead and just full-on canceled the Sanya E-Prix. Sanya being a city in China, it's hosted a couple E-Prix over the last couple seasons, and they just decided to not even test it this year. So the Sanya E-Prix just will not happen. I believe so. I read that it was canceled. I don't believe they've changed their mind into looking for a post, a different date down the calendar. So as far as I know, the Sanya E-Prix is not going to happen. But the thing is, Formula E isn't as lucrative as Formula One, and with, like I said, the amount of attention that goes on for this race in Shanghai, Formula One and the organizers are going to be desperate to get this rescheduled. So, where do we look? Where would be the best chance to possibly reschedule this race? And I think right out of the gate, it would have to be summer break. Right, that four-week-long summer break period that you get in between the Hungarian Grand Prix and the Belgian Grand Prix would probably be the best place to try to fit in the Chinese Grand Prix. And again, that gives you another 6 or so months to see how the progression of this coronavirus goes. And if it does get a little more under control, if it gets a little bit better, then I think absolutely you try to either go the weekend right after Hungary, because the nice thing is you do have a week off in between Great Britain and Hungary. So you wouldn't like you would have to put three races together, because they did that last season. Or no, 2 seasons ago, excuse me, in 2018, they put, I believe it was Austria, France, Austria, and Great Britain back to back to back, and it nearly killed teams. I mean, to try and organize that amount of equipment and that amount of people to 3 different places, and that was within Europe. To try and do that anywhere else where you'd have to leave Asia, come back to Asia, I mean, to try to go cross continents like that, you know, back to back to back would just be insane. So the nice thing is you would get a break in between Great Britain and Hungary. So if you wanted to go back to back there, it would just be 2 races, Hungary and then China, which wouldn't be as taxing on teams. And the summer is that you have to have at least 2 weeks off, 2 weeks of absolutely nothing going on, total shutdown of the teams, so that it just kind of helps everybody, the pit crew members, the strategy members, the front office, essentially, the people there, just not get burned out and, you know, be able to attack what was a 22-race season. It still might be, but should the Chinese Grand Prix not happen, it will be a 21-race season, just like 2019 and 2018 were. So I think either that, again, you look at the end of the summer break, if you want to take the time off right after Hungary and come back, you're running into a bit of a problem there, because Belgium and Italy are back-to-back races, and Belgium is a very taxing circuit. It's the longest circuit on the calendar. It's one of the tougher races with all the elevation changes, so I don't know if you'd want to push teams in that sense to try to make it to China and then Belgium and Italy, because, again, you would have to go from, you know, Europe essentially in Hungary and take your summer break where there's no activity and then try to throw together a China visit, then go to Belgium and Italy. I think, again, that would be too taxing. What you could do, since you have a week off between Italy and Singapore, because typically Singapore and Russia are back-to-back, they're scheduled to be back-to-back this year as well. But what you could do is, since you have an off week between Russia and Japan, essentially move Russia until like right before Japan. And then you could have Singapore and China back-to-back with a week off in between. Or you do have a week off between Japan and the United States. So again, if you're there in Japan, you can just jump right over to China, have that race, and then go to the United States Grand Prix. Now, again, that would make it a triple header. In fact, probably not going to be able to do that unless you move around the Mexican Grand Prix. Essentially, if you kept the schedule how it is and put China after Japan, it would be a 4 straight race, you know, essentially 4 weeks straight with a race. And thinking about that now, they're absolutely not going to do that. But you could essentially move Mexico, Brazil, and Abu Dhabi each down a week or back an extra week to try to create some extra time off there. But essentially, I mean, with a tight calendar the way it is, with those 2 weeks mandated off for the summer for all the teams, it's tough to try to reschedule races now, especially with the fact that the season essentially goes into December already. November 29th is the Sunday in which the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix is scheduled to happen. So again, it's a very tight schedule, and there's not a whole lot of room to try to refit this Chinese Grand Prix in. But I think either going into the summer break after Hungary would most likely be the best option, because that still gives you 2.5, 3 or so weeks of a summer break in between what would be the Chinese Grand Prix and then the Belgian Grand Prix. Otherwise, I think you have to look for some way around either to switch stuff around, either around the Singapore Grand Prix or the Japanese Grand Prix, because at least you're in Asia then, especially if Formula One could figure out a way to do it either before or after the Japanese Grand Prix. That would be, I mean, I imagine that would probably be the other easiest way, besides doing it going into summer break. That would probably be the easiest way, since you're literally right across the sea there in Japan. You could just hop back over to China and do the race there. But I think absolutely the right decision to not put fans and competitors and teams in the danger zone there in China as they're trying to get a hold of this coronavirus epidemic. So it's a bummer not to see China, at least not to see them officially on the schedule right now with the race being postponed. But fingers crossed that they can figure out a place to do it somewhere on later in the calendar, and fingers crossed that we start to get a bit of a hold on this epidemic. But With that now, the first three races of the season don't change. Australia, Bahrain, and Vietnam are scheduled to be the first three races. They will stick to their time frame. They will just have about a month off or so in between Vietnam and the first the reincarnation of the Dutch Grand Prix, which is scheduled to go off the first Sunday of May. So we'll see what happens there, but it is a bit of a bummer just to see that the Chinese Grand Prix just isn't right now looking like it's going to happen with the way the epidemic is going in China, but fingers crossed that it all gets better in that area. One other piece of news I wanted to talk about here, opening up the show. You heard it there if you were listening to SportsCenter at the top of the hour, and that is that Myles Garrett has been reinstated into the NFL. Now, I don't disagree with the reinstatement. I think, you know, this is a guy that you essentially did serve a punishment. I don't know if it was a long enough punishment, but did essentially serve a 6-game suspension and now is welcome back into the NFL. So I'm okay. I mean, I imagined he was going to be reinstated at some point because, if this had been a helmet-to-head hit, that obviously swinging the helmet to hit Mason Rudolph, but if it had busted open Mason Rudolph, if it had given him a legit, like, serious concussion, I could see then the argument of saying, hey, don't let him back into the NFL. Maybe it was just a luck of the fact that Garrett couldn't get a full extension on the swing or didn't, you know, make full contact. I mean, I think it was the bottom of the little ear protector part of the helmet that came and actually hit Rudolph. But still, had Rudolph been damaged more in the action of Garrett swinging the helmet at him, then maybe it is a much longer wait to get back into the NFL. And who knows, maybe Myles Garrett in his meeting with Roger Goodell did truly say that he was sorry, maybe owned up to it. Because after the initial incident, Myles Garrett had accused Mason Rudolph of kind of egging him on by using a racial slur when the two were on the ground after the play. Now, of course, Rudolph came out and said that wasn't true. Other Steelers teammates came out and said that we don't see Mason Rudolph as that kind of a guy. We don't believe it, da-da-da-da-da. And maybe in that meeting with Roger Goodell, Myles Garrett just owned up to it and said, yeah, you know what? I was frustrated. I was angry. I was just ready to be done. I was sick of the trash talk between everybody, not just Rudolph, but everybody there with the Steelers. And I just lost my emotion and swung a helmet at a guy. And if that's what he did, if he owned up to it to Roger Goodell, I could see Goodell then going, you know what? The 6 games was enough. You're already playing in Cleveland, which is essentially another punishment that you have to go through in essentially whatever, however long your career you're going to spend there. So you know what? Welcome back to the NFL. That's the only reason I could really see Goodell bringing Myles Garrett back after 6 games. Because to me, I would have had him sit out at least the first half of this coming season as well. Miss the last, you know, third or so of last season, sit out the first half of this season as a punishment, and then essentially just tell them, hey, after your team plays 8 games, we'll reinstate you. I think 14, 15 game suspension would be a little bit nicer than just a 6-game suspension for the act of swinging a helmet at a guy with no helmet on. So I'm not surprised by the reinstatement, but I am a little surprised how quickly he was reinstated. So 6 games just doesn't feel like enough for that kind of act on a football field. And now, of course, all the talk is around his image. How does Myles Garrett, you know, restructure his image to not only the Cleveland Browns, but to the entire NFL fan base as well, who's going to essentially paint this guy as a villain and borderline psycho at every road game he plays this season? I would imagine there's going to be some chance along the way, although probably not. You know what? College crowds are more likely to make a chant towards somebody and something that they've done either on the field or off the field than a pro crowd would. So you know what? Maybe not chance, but I imagine there's got to be some signs that point to the helmet swinging. Obviously, there was all the memes that came out right afterward. The one that I thought was still funny was the windshield wiper on the back of the car that had the Steelers helmet, and then there was a picture of Mason Rudolph's head on the bottom. I think it was like the bottom right hand side of the back windshield. So when they turned the windshield wiper on, it was just the helmet constantly hitting Mason Rudolph in the head. That I thought was pretty funny. But essentially, I guess, you know, if you're Myles Garrett, you just have to be ready for whatever is thrown at you during this football season. Own up to it. Say, yeah, it happened. We're ready to move on. Because that's the best way to do it. to not acknowledge how someone's egging you on or how a fan or somebody might be egging you on, just say, hey, you know, it's behind me, going to play hard, and then going out and playing hard, that's the best way to move about it. And it's just going to take time for his image and the way people see him to kind of recuperate and get better. And if Cleveland starts winning a little bit, that could help too. Because when you're playing like this on a team that's losing, it makes it, you know, easier for people to come at you. If Cleveland can start winning, that would also help people, I think, you know, not, you know, bring it up as much. Or essentially, it would make people shut up. But we'll see what happens. But I think, without a doubt, it's just going to take time for Myles Garrett to get his image back up to wherever it was and beyond for the future. But a little surprised that he was reinstated this quickly, but not surprised that he was at some point reinstated. All right, when we come back from the break, we will talk a little NHL as week 19 of the NHL season is in the books. So we're going to take a look at the standings, which had a surprising amount of movement. So that's coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more. Welcome back to the show. Somehow we are through 19 weeks of the NHL season. It seems as though the first half has really just kind of flown by as we are now, less than 2 months away from the end of the season. I mean, playoffs start early April, so we are closing in quickly, and we have some races that are really heating up. Looking at the Eastern Conference, not as much movement as the Western Conference, but there was kind of two big shifts. So we'll start with the Metropolitan Division because it's essentially status quo in the Metropolitan Division. Washington still in the lead there. They have a 3-point lead on the Pittsburgh Penguins. So Pittsburgh has managed to cut the lead in half. It was 6 points after week 18. So it's now down to 3. And Washington struggling a little bit. They only had 2 games this week, both at home and both losses to Philadelphia 7-2 and the Islanders 5-3. So two teams that are also in the Metropolitan Division. And the Islanders use that win to catapult themselves up a spot into third place there in the Metropolitan Division after being kicked out of that spot by Columbus last week. We now have New York returning to the third spot in the Metropolitan Division. So, and the Islanders just 2 points back of Pittsburgh, just 5 points back of Washington. So we'll see how that race ends up. But Washington has not looked as crisp. And they did have that kind of on-off week last week where they had a tough loss to the Pittsburgh Penguins. They were able to bounce back with a win at home against the Kings. But if you look at the fact that in February they've had 4 home games and they've lost 3 of those home games, I mean, think that's 8 points total that you could get right there at home. They've only managed to get 2 of them. They couldn't even get a point out of an overtime loss either way. But this has been a struggling month for Washington. And they have a road trip that isn't going to be the easiest either. They have Colorado, Arizona, and Vegas coming up on the road this week. And those 3 games are not going to be easy. It's always tough for a team going from West Coast to East Coast or East Coast to West Coast. But then when you have to face essentially three playoff teams in the Western Conference on that road trip, that is not going to make it any easier at all for Washington. So we'll see if this 3-point lead gets trimmed up any more by Pittsburgh. But that's where the top 3 in the Metropolitan Division stand. In the Atlantic Division, Boston still in first, but Tampa Bay quickly closed. So as of last week, after week 18, Boston had a 7-point lead. It was 78-71. Well, now after week 19, Boston's lead has been cut to 1 point over Tampa Bay. The defending President's Cup trophy winners have been storming through the second half of the season so far, being a middle-of-the-pack wildcard team up into the top 3 in the division, now 1 point off the Boston Bruins, who have essentially had that top spot the entire season in the Atlantic Division. And for Boston, they had a game they won on the road against Chicago 2-1, did the Bruins. Then they had a home win against Arizona 4-2. So it wasn't like they were playing bad. Then they just had that shock loss on the road on Sunday to Detroit 3-1. One of the picks or one of the games that wrecked my picks over the weekend on the ice. And it's not like they've been playing bad. I mean, they also had a win, 4-0 win over Vancouver the night before they went on the road and beat Chicago in overtime. So it's not like this team has played bad, but Tampa Bay just can't be beat right now. Tampa Bay had four games this past week, and they won all four of them. Tampa Bay beat Pittsburgh 4-2 at home, then beat the Islanders 3-1 at home, then went on the road the last two nights and got big overtime victories, 2-1 both times against Columbus and Pittsburgh on the road. So Tampa Bay really starting to find a rhythm, really about to put some pressure on Boston with about a little under 2 months to go in this season. And Tampa Bay is now right there on the heels of the Boston Bruins. And that's going to be fun. They do not play each other the rest of this month. But looking at March, they do have a matchup on March 3rd at home in Tampa Bay. And that will be the last meeting between Tampa Bay and Boston this season, will be March 3rd. So that matchup is looming more and more significant as we close out the month of February. But Toronto, this is another big story out of the Atlantic Division. So talk about Tampa Bay closing that 7-point gap to 1 point against the Boston Bruins. Well, Toronto, in 1 week's time, has gone from fourth place in the wild card standings up to third place in the Atlantic Division. A four spot jump for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And even with a not great week, I mean, they lost on the road to the Rangers 5-3, and they were able to bounce back and beat Anaheim 5-4 in overtime at home, but then lost 2-1 to Montreal in overtime on Saturday, another game that messed up my picks over the weekend for the NHL, and then last night got another big bounce back win at home, 3-2 over the Coyotes in overtime. So it's not as if Toronto's been going on these crazy losing streaks. They've just been losing and winning and losing and winning. And when you alternate games like that, especially later on in the season, if it's just that kind of consistency, you can see positive change out of it if teams around you just aren't winning a whole lot or aren't being as consistent as you, throughout the last few months of the season. So I think Toronto is using that a little bit as right now, as they can still get wins. They struggled on the road, losing those two games, but picking up wins at home is a good way to kind of counteract that when you have weeks like Boston did or like some of the other teams did where you're losing a majority of the games. Those few extra wins here and there really help, and it's helped Toronto now become a top three team in the Atlantic Division. So they'll obviously hope to keep that going. In the wild card standings, not a ton of movement there. Columbus, of course, with the Islanders moving back up to third in the Metropolitan Division. Columbus has been knocked down to the top wild card spot. Philadelphia still holds that final playoff position, 1 point separating Columbus and Philadelphia. Carolina just back by 2 points of Philadelphia there in that first on the bubble spot. Florida, who was in third in the Atlantic Division, has fallen now four spots back to the place that Toronto was in. So Florida now fourth in the wild card standings. Then Montreal and the Rangers and Buffalo staying in fifth, sixth, and seventh. New Jersey and Ottawa, kind of like they've done down there at the bottom of the Eastern Conference, just swapping positions. But Detroit still dead last there in the Eastern Conference and in the NHL. But now looking at the Western Conference, where the top teams in the Central Division and Pacific Division stayed the same. St. Louis held on to their lead there in the Central Division after having, again, not a great week. Losing at home to Winnipeg 4-2 and losing to Dallas at home in overtime 3-2. Not the best way to get their week started off. And then, of course, the very tough game last night for St. Louis when they were at Anaheim. That game got postponed because of Blues player Jay Bouwmeester collapsed on the bench after coming off the ice, after completing his shift. He was sitting on the bench and then just collapsed off of it. He was rushed to the UC Irvine Medical Center in Anaheim. Weren't releasing a whole lot of information last night, obviously, as the doctors and everybody were trying to figure out what was wrong and how they were going to help Jay. But reports this morning are that Jay Bouwmeester is doing very well. He is recovering nicely in the UC Irvine Medical Hospital, or Medical Center. So we're just going to hope that he continues that recovery, and we're going to hope that he gets back on the ice. St. Louis's next game is scheduled to be tomorrow night in Vegas. So thankfully, it's not a long trip from Anaheim to Vegas, because the team did announce that they were going to stay in Anaheim and wait until this morning when they got word of Jay's condition and how he was doing. So now that I imagine they've heard he's doing very well. I don't know if they've left for Vegas yet or not, but I'm sure that's going to bring that team and that fan base and, of course, Jay's family a lot of peace that he is doing better. And, of course, what was a crazy part about that game also was that it was, I think it was a father's game or something, where Blues players had brought their fathers to the game. So thankfully, Jay's dad was able to get in the ambulance and ride to the hospital with him. So thankfully, there was a member of Jay's family there with him as he was going through that, which I'm sure hopefully brought him a little bit of comfort, and hopefully gave his family a little bit of comfort that there was somebody that obviously Jay knew was with him. But good to hear that Bouwmeester is doing better. Hopefully he continues that good recovery and he can get back on the ice as soon as possible. But St. Louis does prepare for what could be a rather challenging week, with Vegas on the road tomorrow night. And then they have back-to-back games with Nashville at home on Saturday and then away on Sunday before being home against New Jersey this coming Tuesday, the 18th. So we'll see how St. Louis does. You know, these types of things can always be used as motivation and encouragement and power, and for a team in St. Louis that is still in first place, but just like Boston has seen a bit of a lead get cut. St. Louis did have a 7-point lead over Dallas after week 18. Colorado has now jumped Dallas back into second and cut that lead down to 1 point for the Blues. So the Colorado Avalanche trailing by 1 point to St. Louis with a game in the bag, as well as St. Louis has played 56 games and Colorado has only played 55. And then, of course, Dallas was moved back down to third after moving up to second last week. The Stars are back down to third, 3 points back of Colorado with 69. Then we get to the Pacific Division. The top two stayed the same. Vancouver and Edmonton still first and second in the Pacific Division. Vancouver, not the best week for the Canucks. They lost on the road to Minnesota 4-2, then fell at home to Calgary 6-2 before bouncing back with a 6-2 win of their own two nights ago at home against Nashville. They have two tough games at home against Chicago and home against Anaheim this week. Of course, both teams, well, Anaheim was able to move up a spot, but Chicago, one of the biggest fallers, so this could be a week for Vancouver to get back into those winning ways. But Edmonton, 66 points, 1 point back of Vancouver there in second. And then one of the bigger risers in the Western Conference this past week was Calgary. The Flames making it an all-Canadian top three in the Pacific Division now with 64 points. They moved up two spots into third place there in the Pacific Division. And again, a week that saw them get off to a little bit of a rocky start with a 3-2 loss to Nashville at home, but then picked up that 6-2 win on the road against Vancouver, and then another 6-2 victory on the road against San Jose two nights ago on Monday. So Calgary now 2 points back of Edmonton, three back of Vancouver in an all-Canadian top three Pacific Division. Then we get into the wild card standings, and a fair amount of movement in the wild card standings in the Western Conference this week. Vegas down a spot. They were in third in the Pacific Division. They have moved down to that first wild card spot. Also on 64 points with Calgary. Arizona was bumped down a spot to second in the final wild card position, also on 64 points. So you can see that Pacific Division, essentially the top five teams in that Pacific Division, all separated by 3 points with some tiebreakers in there. So this Pacific Division is going to get pretty freaking wild as we close in on this last month and a half or so of the season. But then Winnipeg and Minnesota both up two spots. Winnipeg now in third in the wild card, 1 point back of Arizona. Minnesota in fourth, 4 points back of the Coyotes. Nashville fell a spot to fifth. Then we get to Chicago, who were the biggest droppers of the week, down three spots from where they were. They were up to the bubble spot there in the Western Conference wild card race, just 2 points back of Calgary after week 18. But now they find themselves just 6 points back. So it's not like they're still way, way back of this wild card race. But because of how tight and how much shuffling we had, Chicago, even with Still just 6 points back of the wild card spot, dropped three places to sixth place. And then as we had the Canadian three running the Pacific Division, the California three still on the bottom of the Western Conference. Anaheim was able to jump up into seventh, but San Jose dropping to eighth, and Los Angeles still in ninth there in the Western Conference wild card picture. But that is essentially where we are after 19 weeks of the NHL season. And hats off as well. I meant to mention this, but Tampa Bay on a team winning streak right now. That is the longest streak active right now in the NHL in terms of winning, or actually in terms of a streak period. So hats off to Tampa Bay. Another reason why they were able to close down on the Boston Bruins there in the Atlantic Division. Again, that March 3rd matchup is going to be very, very important to probably that Atlantic Division run as we get closer to the end of the season. But three games tonight that start off week 20 of the NHL season. You have the Canadiens at the Bruins, the Flames at the Kings, and the Blackhawks at the Canucks. I would honestly go Bruins, Flames, and Vancouver in those three games, but those are not my official picks for the day. But those three games should be an exciting way to kick off the 20th week of this NHL season, and we'll see how it goes. But as they move their way towards the end of the season, college basketball is doing the same, and we have a new top 25 out, some interesting headlines as well. So we'll talk about all that coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more. College basketball getting closer and closer to the finish line. And before we get into kind of the national, picture of college basketball, wanted to remind everybody that both the men's and women's teams are going to be in action tonight on the hardwood. It is rivalry games with UNLV, so it's not games you're going to want to miss. On the men's side, they play at 7 p.m. tonight on the road down in Vegas. You can hear that show, hear that game right here on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. Also on ESPN3, which is ESPN Plus. It's just part of that. So if you have that or subscribe to it, you can watch it there. Otherwise, you can catch John Ramey's call of the game right here, like I said, on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. Tip at 7 o'clock. So the pregame will start at 6:30. And then we also, of course, have the women's game against UNLV that will be here at home, and that tip is at 6:30 p.m. at Lawler Events Center. So if you can't get there, CBS Sports, our sister station over here, 94.1 FM, 1450 AM, will be broadcasting that network, or broadcasting that game. So you can catch our pal Doug Greenwald's call there at 6:30, pregame starting at 6:10. It is a blackout game there, so be sure to wear your black if you're going to go to the game tonight against UNLV, which I encourage you to do because this was a tight first contest between the women. This is one of those tough buzzer-beating losses for Nevada this year, and they were at UNLV. Rebels won 66-64, so Nevada looking for some revenge tonight at home, so be sure to wear the black, be a part of the blackout, and get out there and support them. And of course, Nevada looking to sweep UNLV this season after the Wolfpack beat the Rebels 86-72 back in on January 22nd here at Lawler Events Center. So should be two for the men's and women's side. Be sure to check them out and support the Pack tonight as they, I believe this is the fifth to last game of the season. Just a few more games left before we get into Mountain West Conference play. So be sure to support the Pack as much as you can, whether that's out in person or listening to it here on the radio, because both teams still playing some good basketball. But looking at the national picture now, we had a new top 25 come out a couple days ago, and nothing has changed in the top nine. Baylor, still your number one overall seed, 21-1, receiving 48 votes. to be the number one team there, which is understandable. This is a team that just continues to play out of their freaking mind. And as you would imagine, they are still the number one seed in bracketology as well on ESPN.com, as number one Baylor would play either North Carolina Central or Robert Morris there in the first round. That would be the winner of that first four game would play Baylor there in Omaha, Nebraska in the opening round. But again, Baylor deserves to be up there at number one. They've played their rear ends off. They've really played a very nice conference season through the Big 12, which, I mean, no conference has really looked the same this year. The Big 12 hasn't, the ACC hasn't, the SEC hasn't. It's been a very different year for college basketball, but Baylor has been a fantastic team this year. They've been playing really hard. Of course, that 21-1 record does not lie. They are one of the strongest teams in the country, if not the strongest team in the country. So that number one ranking, you know, very suitable for the Baylor Bears. Gonzaga staying in second, receiving 15 votes, and Gonzaga did stay as a number one seed in the bracketology. But where they are, they would essentially be the third overall team behind Kansas, who comes in at number three at the AP poll. Which I think Kansas is still getting a little too much of some special treatment here. This is a team that has not looked the same. To think that Kansas was able to get a vote over undefeated San Diego State, that still doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, with San Diego State being the only undefeated team left in college basketball and has been for a little while now. It amazes me still that they are not getting at least one vote for being the best team in the country. You can make an excuse and make all the arguments you want about, oh, it's the Mountain West, it's not a Power 5 school, and blah, blah, blah. But Gonzaga gets to be number two. They're getting 15 votes, and they've lost a game. They're 25-1. How is a 20-3 Kansas team getting a vote over a 24-0 San Diego State squad? Or I think 25-0 now. I think they picked up a win last night against New Mexico. So they're still undefeated, and they're still not getting a single vote for number one in the country, which blows my mind. I completely do not agree with it. And the San Diego State, as you would imagine, the other number one seed as well. So no changes in the number one seeds at bracketology, with Baylor, Kansas, Gonzaga, and San Diego State all being number one seeds. And not a whole lot of movement on the number two lines either, as it's Duke, Dayton, and Louisville stay at number two. And Duke, of course, held their spot at 7th, Dayton held their spot at 6th, and Louisville held their spot in 5th. So again, it makes sense that those would be your three teams that are rocking number two seeds right now. But we did have Maryland, who is 9th right now, ranked 9th, but did manage to jump their way into the number two spot, essentially over Florida State. And you look at what Maryland has done. They lost to Wisconsin 56-54 on... Where's the date of this game? On January 14th, so almost a month ago, Maryland lost to Wisconsin 56-54. And since that loss, Maryland has just rattled off wins. 57-50 over Purdue, 77-66, 77-76, 82-72, 56-51, goes on and on. Close games that Maryland have continued to pull out, whether on the road or at home. And you know what? The Big Ten Conference is a Power 5 conference. We expect, I mean, that's the kind of games we expect from all Power 5 conferences, is for a team to have to be tested going through each game, whether it's against a team bottom of the conference or top of the conference. And Maryland has held their own since that loss at Wisconsin, with wins again over Purdue, a ranked Iowa team, a good Illinois team, a good Nebraska team, a good Iowa team. So this is a Maryland team that is working hard again up into the top 10, or staying in the top 10 there in the rankings, but jumped their way up to the number two spot there in bracketology. And then not a whole lot of changes on the three lines as well. Florida State stayed at three. Seton Hall stayed at three. Seton Hall also was able to move up two spots into the top 10 in the men's college basketball world. We were talking about how Seton Hall, Villanova, and Butler were all going to be kind of the three teams to watch outside of the Power 5 conferences. And so far, Seton Hall able to pull away. They had that game against Villanova relatively recently. It was the most recent game. They were at number 10 Villanova. They won 70-64, which was a huge game for them, not just in conference, but also just to show them what they can do on a national stage. So getting moved up to the number 10 seed there. So Seton Hall also looking like a pretty scrappy team as we move forward to the postseason. But they were able to hold on to their three seed, We did have West Virginia drop to a 3 seed with the kind of 2-2 that they've been on their last 4 games, losing at Texas Tech, but beating Kansas State and Iowa State, but then losing at Oklahoma. So West Virginia being a little bit rocky, which is obviously, I think, why they fell off there to a 3 seed. And then you had Auburn moving up to a 3 seed. And Auburn has to be thinking that if they could just have avoided those 2 back-to-back losses at Alabama and at Florida, they could easily be the number one team in the country right now. Because the way they were running through teams in their preseason, the way they were handling the SEC, the way they've handled the SEC coming off those back-to-back losses against Alabama and Florida, they seem to be a team that's once again found their rhythm. They could be looking to get back into that national championship picture like they did last year. And with no games against Alabama, Missouri, and Georgia all coming up, Missouri and Georgia on the road, this could be a challenging end of the season for Auburn, but it could also be a spot where they really cement that national contender status. When you got still, you know, games against Kentucky still on the road on your schedule, this is not going to be an easy end, as you would imagine it wouldn't be in the SEC. But Auburn, 21-2 right now, does have a chance to once again kind of reinstate themselves as national title contenders. They dropped to they stayed in 11th, but of course where they were in the top of the rankings closer to the start of the season, dropping outside the top 10, it's kind of a bummer to see Auburn take that step. But I think they've got some good guard play. They're going to be able to continue to attack teams the way they want to and the way they have to see. So I think Auburn is going to be able to close that, have a good close to the end of their season and kind of put themselves in a strong position there in the SEC championship tournament. Then we look at the 4 seeds again, not a whole lot of movement. Butler and Villanova, again, I think behind Seton Hall because of the way the games between those teams have gone this year. But Butler and Villanova still at 4. And you have Penn State and Kentucky both moving up to 4 seeds. Kentucky did beat Vanderbilt last night, 78-64. So I got that part of my pick right. But I was thinking that Kentucky would have the lead essentially at halftime and the end of the game. But Vanderbilt had an extremely good first half last night, and they were able to have a lead going into halftime. So, unfortunately, didn't get my pick last night. But Kentucky, since losing to Auburn on the road, 75-66, they've beaten Mississippi State, Tennessee, and Vanderbilt now, so they're getting back into those winning ways. They have a game against Ole Miss in a few days here on February 15th. They'll play Ole Miss at home before another tough matchup against ranked LSU. So we'll see how Kentucky ends their season. Again, a team that we just haven't seen. Michigan State's completely dropped out of the top 25. The preseason number one is gone out of the top 25. That tells you the kind of season it's been. Even with Kentucky getting back into a winning rhythm here with 3 straight wins, it's been an odd season from their standpoint as well. North Carolina is the biggest head scratch. Of course, they had that injuries throughout their season that have kind of plagued their growth and their development. But still, that's a big shocker as well for a team that just hasn't really lived up to it. And Kentucky, I feel like, has been more spotty than usual this season. But they've been able to move themselves up into a 4th spot, as did Penn State, the team that is ranked 13th right now out of the Big Ten. And they lost to Minnesota a little while back and have rattled off 7 consecutive victories. They have a game this weekend at home against Northwestern as well. But Penn State also playing some really good basketball. We've seen some great basketball kind of spread around the Power 5 conferences this year and outside the Power 5 as well, with Wake Gonzaga, San Diego State, Seton Hall, Villanova, the way some of these teams have played. So it'll be interesting to see how the season winds down. But don't forget, Nevada men and women's basketball have games tonight. Men here on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. The women on our sister station, 94.1 FM at 1450 AM. So be sure to tune in and support the pack if you cannot make it out to the women's game at Lawler Event Center tonight at 6:30. When we come back from the break, I'll end the show giving you my pick and recap my pick a little more from yesterday. It's coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more. Yes, and unfortunately, my 2 spents with yesterday did not pay off. I picked Kentucky to lead at halftime and to win on their game against Vanderbilt. Kentucky did win, but they were trailing by, I think, 7 or 8, actually, by halftime, possibly even 9. So didn't get that pick yesterday. But I'm going to stick to the world of college basketball because I'm determined to get one right now this week. So we got 2 games going on tonight. The rematch of Alabama-Auburn. I just talked about one of those losses that Auburn suffered that kind of derailed the hot start they were on. But this time, number 11 Auburn is at home against Alabama. So I'm going to pick Auburn to beat the Crimson Tide in the rematch tonight. And then Rutgers also plays Ohio State in the Big Ten in Ohio State. So I'm going to go with the Buckeyes at home over the Scarlet Knights. So I'm going to pick that Auburn and Ohio State both win their games tonight. I think, you know, with Ohio State actually being a little below Rutgers in the Big Ten standings, that's the one I'm a little nervous about. Obviously, with the way Auburn and Alabama went the first time, I could understand, you know, being a little nervous about that. But I'm pretty confident that Auburn is going to bounce back here at home. This team, obviously, with those 2 losses at Alabama and Florida, haven't lost since. So I think they're going to learn from that first experience against the Crimson Tide. I think they're going to be able to bring a new game to the floor tonight. I think at home, they're going to be able to dominate the way they want to. Auburn favored by 7.5 at home. They are the consensus pick, as well as Ohio State is the consensus pick, 5.5-point favorites at home against Rutgers. So both games should be close, but I'm hoping that my good feeling for Ohio State and Auburn are both going to pay off. So that is the pick for today. But that is the show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed it. Again, a reminder that both the men's and women's games play tonight. The women at 6:30. You can either catch it here at the Lawler Event Center. Remember, it is a blackout, so you can go check it out there. Or you can listen to our sister station, 94.1 FM. Also, don't forget the men's game at 7 o'clock tonight. Pregame at 6:30 right here on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. John Ring will be on that call. Doug Green for the women. Like I said, though, that is the show. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. We will talk again tomorrow at 2 o'clock, so be sure to tune in. We'll have some fun stuff on the docket for you, but enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Hope you get through the rest of your hump day with peace, and we'll talk tomorrow. Peace!